Hello, my name is Craig Faust with Life Care Counseling, and you are listening to St. Louis Therapist Spotlight. And I am just going to meet with another fellow therapist that I know does good work and talk with them a little bit about their practice and their specialties. So if it's something that you feel like may be a good fit for you or someone that you know, then you may be able to get in contact with them. So without any further delay, here we go. Hello, my name is Craig, and I'm here with Kristen. Can you say hi to everyone, Kristen?
Hello, everybody. My name's Kristen Craren, and I'm the owner of Craren Family Services, LLC. I'm an LPC, which means I'm a licensed professional counselor, and my practice is located in Clayton, Missouri.
So I want to say a couple things. Like first things first, in Clayton, Missouri. So we're not actually meeting at your office right now. We're actually meeting at your home. Can you tell me a little bit where in Clayton your office is located?
Yeah, my office in Clayton is at Bemiston and Forest Park Parkway, kind of out of the middle of all the busyness, which is really nice when clients are coming to park. Usually people are intimidated by Clayton because of the meters and the garages and things like that, but it seems like my building tends to be easier. And then we're at the house right now. I do work out of my home office, which is actually the sunroom. That's off to the side and very isolated from the rest of the house. And I work from here on Fridays. So clients that live more out this direction in St. Charles can come here, and they're really happy about that because they don't have to drive an extra 20 minutes into Clayton.
Yeah, it's like a nice little two-office scenario that you have. So I was hoping, can you tell me just a little bit about your background and really kind of what got you into counseling?
What got me into counseling? I started as an elementary school teacher, so a certified elementary school. I did a school counseling internship, actually. And when I was in the schools with the kids, I really wanted to do more in-depth counseling with these kids and with the families. And so I decided to take some more classes and get the ability to work in the community in private practice, because I discovered that's what I enjoy the most. And so that's how I ended up doing that.
Well, I think that's so hard too, is being in a school, you're basically held back from doing any major mm-hmm. form of counseling just due to the liability with it. So I can see how that would be really disheartening. And mm-hmm. I think that those that see you in their private practice are probably all the more thankful for that. Yeah. So I'm kind of wondering, can you just give me a little bit of insight? Tell me a little bit about the practice that you have, some of the people that you serve, and, even if I'm someone that's listening to this, how would I have an idea of what or who maybe you serve best?
Okay. So I started out being really passionate about divorced families. Advocating for the kids, you know, and the family. So I can do that really well in private practice by working with the adults who are going through the divorce, and then teach them how to help their children through the process too. So I work with divorcing families. I have training in mediation, so I've cross-trained in the legal and financial fields as well. So I have education on that. I have relationships with many attorneys in St. Louis because of the role in mediation mm-hmm. that I play. I also work with individuals, adults, who have parents that are divorced, and they never process that experience. So they come into me usually with anxiety or depression. And of course, we talk about their history, and up pops that. And then we find that that's something that they need to work through.
Yeah. Or sometimes feelings of guilt or shame, like it was somehow them that contributed to that happening.
Yeah, I used to think that was something that you saw in the movies, like, oh, the kid thinks it's their fault. Yeah. But it's real, and it's not such a conscious thought that children have. Mm-hmm. And it's not even a conscious thought you have as an adult. But as you start to process through that experience as an adult, it comes up that, yes, I felt very insecure. I wondered if I could do something, or if I had control of it, any kind over my parents' split.
Yeah. So I just want to take a moment and mention about how, like, first of all, this is a very specific population that you're working with, and being able to provide mediation as well and having training in that is very rare as far as how counselors operate or anything like that. So that's something that's really good to know, is that not only that you are working with divorcing families, which is a really hard population to work with, most type of therapists actually avoid working with that type.
I can understand why.
Oh, yeah. Just due to the long, drag-out fights that couples can have in their office about kids or anything like that. So you being trained and having knowledge as far as like mediation and willing to work with these, I think says a lot about like who you are and the work that you must do.
I'm really passionate about it. I come from a long line of divorce, and so I know the impact that it takes personally as a child, as an adult, because I'm divorced myself and remarried now. So it's important to me that if someone can have a happier divorce or a better situation, that I feel like I'm almost called to do that, for sure.
I think that's an important thing too, is the one of the focuses you said was on the child, is that if parents can be at least on the same page or more cordial, then it goes so much better for them.
Yeah.
The conversations are so much different. And I think the important thing is, and this is, I don't know if you see this or if this is something that you've experienced much in your work, is that kids can kind of unintentionally take advantage of their parents a lot of times in divorce.
Oh, yes.
Where it's like, hey, I can get away with a lot of things because mom and dad are really, really PO'd at each other. And if I don't like what one of them's saying, I'll just go to the other one. And if I'm old enough, maybe I can even threaten that I would rather stay with the other one rather than see you.
My kids do it all the time.
Yeah, so
all the time.
I think that's got to be something really hard to navigate.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of wondering, can you just give me some type of insight, like especially you being trained in mediation, how does that come into play whenever you're meeting with the family or even meeting with you know, some of the kids that you might work with?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is that if I'm a family's counselor, I can't be their mediator because that would be a dual relationship. Families can certainly call me and ask to have a consult about what their options are. Mm-hmm. And in that case, I'm not in a counselor role. So if they decide to do counseling, that's fine. Or if they decide to do mediation, that's fine. And I can take on mediation with them. Mm-hmm. I always do mediation with a partner. Mm-hmm. And her name's Nicole Davis, and she's a financial professional. And so she's really good with numbers and projections and things like that. And I'm really good at guiding the conversation and bringing the emotions out that keep people stuck in the process. So
so for you, creating very clear lines between, all right, what is it that you're seeking me for? Are you seeking me for this mediation piece? Are you seeking me for like the more the family therapy, us getting along piece?
Yeah.
That's happening. So I'm kind of wondering, like, for you, let's say that I'm someone that's going through a divorce. Would I come and seek you, like, what stage would I come and seek you, or to be any stage of the divorce that could I be.
It could be any stage. I think it's good to have support throughout the entire divorce. Some people come in and see me weekly for a year or two while they're going through the divorce and then after the divorce. So at any stage someone feels like they need support or their kids need support, come on in.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, I kind of wonder, can you tell me, so we know about the family therapy part, we know about the mediation part. Can you tell me about some of the other training or other specialization or anything that you might have that you might actually use whenever you're in session with some of these families or some of these children?
I'm trained in EMDR, and I use that quite a bit to work with families.
So can you tell me a little bit about what is EMDR? What does it stand for?
Okay, so EMDR stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. And that is a mouthful, right?
It is. I see why you call it EMDR instead. So can you just give me a little bit of idea of if I'm someone that's seeing you and I'm receiving EMDR, give me an idea of what does that look like? What's happening to me while I'm receiving EMDR?
Okay. So usually I use clients, I use EMDR with clients who come in and they're stuck in like a thought pattern or a feeling that's very disruptive to them. Usually it's some sort of anxiety that they've been living with for a long time. If we use the example of children that have been through divorce, following what we've been talking about, a kid could present with feelings that they feel like they don't have a mom or dad anymore, that it's their fault, like we talked about. Mm-hmm. And so we take that feeling and traditionally attach it to some sort of image. And we start there and we do what we call bilateral stimulation, which is essentially just stimulating your body in some way across the midline. So you can do that with eye movements, like following a clinician's finger across the midline of your body. You can do it by tapping your knees, alternating. Some clinicians have light bars, but for kids, we do lots of different things like hold a slinky at each end and make your hands go up and down, or catching bubbles with the right and left hands, to do that while they're thinking about this feeling and getting information that's more helpful from the clinician.
Yeah, I think that if I was someone that was choosing, I'd definitely choose the slinky option. I also just kind of want to mention with EMDR that EMDR is really, really big. It has a lot of research behind it. Mm-hmm. There's a big organization behind it that goes into training clinicians for this thing. And the reason that I want to mention that is like those practitioners that practice EMDR, probably even like you, have had a lot of training in it. There's a lot that goes into it. And I think that someone that may be hearing this may be like, well, that's kind of strange. But for us, being able to process some of these emotional experiences, being able to have that bilateral stimulation is really important.
It works. It is crazy. My clients call it my magic voodoo. And they're like, oh my gosh, like this feeling is gone now. I don't associate these feelings with this memory or this thing that happened anymore. It's like I remember it, but that's it. And that's the goal, simply, of EMDR.
All right, good deal. I kind of wonder, so for you, you might use that for adults or kids that you may work with.
You can use it on your dog.
Really?
Yes, I was so curious about this. I asked the trainer a couple years ago when I was trained, can you use this on animals? And she said, yes, her dog was having difficulty walking past another dog's line of fence. And so because something had happened. And so she tapped his behind on each side as they walked by and did it more and more. And eventually the animal was able to walk by this line of fence more comfortably.
Really? So for us, kind of knowing that whenever EMDR occurs, it really helps you start to regulate.
Yes.
Whatever disruptive emotion is really deregulating you, it helps regulate that, so you're experiencing more normalcy.
Yes.
So to say. So I kind of wonder, can you tell me about any other, like, maybe training or techniques that you may use whenever these families or these children may come and see you?
I really like narrative therapy with everybody. Telling a story can be very curative. I'm writing a story with a young lady right now because she's been through a lot. And you can actually use EMDR with that as well. And so you retell the story, that the life story that's happened, in a way that's adaptive, that's more helpful.
Well, in stories, I have so many images, so I imagine that could be really helpful as far as a treatment. So if I'm someone, I'm hearing about this, I'm like, narrative therapy, okay, it sounds like you're saying you make stories. Like, can you kind of give me an example of what that may look like on like a really practical level?
So narrative therapy at the practical level. So how I use it with a client? in the office, just an easy explanation. Okay. So with parents and kids, oftentimes parents are really useful in the therapy session, especially in divorce situations, because they have a lot of information that I don't have. They're with the kid every day. They know the story. Mm-hmm. Right? So I've had the child and the parent sit on the couch, and then the parent is actually doing the EMDR tapping on the child's feet, you know, bare feet. And I've coached the parent on how to tell the story of the divorce to the child in a way that helps the child onboard helpful information that's going to help them emotionally and also help them process through this divorce story. Mm-hmm. So
it's like, hey, in this story of our divorce, this is the part that you are in it. Like, you are more of like a bystander.
Right.
Whereas this awful thing happened between, you know, me and your other parent. Mm-hmm. And because this awful thing ended up happening to us, this distance has grown. And like, we haven't been able to see eye to eye. Like, we're fighting this thing that's happening between us.
Yeah.
This is now affecting you because you're a part of us. You're a part of us. So using that as a way of trying to frame up their role, like, this is your role in it. Your role didn't have anything to do with impacting us, but what we've done is actually impacting you.
Yeah, narratives work really well with kids because they're little sponges, and the role of the parent is so powerful because this child is just standing there looking at you for the narrative. Yeah. And so you can install information into your child's head for better or worse. But in the therapy office, of course, it's for the better.
Yeah. I love the use of narrative therapy as a way of taking out a piece of yourself and being able to examine it. Mm-hmm. So you could take out the anxiety and be like, all right, well, what does that anxiety look like? If it had a form, what color would it be?
Yes.
What shape would it
take? I love that one, too.
Like, what kind of characteristics would it have? It really starts to bring to life some of these emotional experiences that we have. And like you said, like kids are designed for that. Shoot, adults are designed for that, too. Our brain is designed to latch on to that stuff, to try to explain some of these things that are so... that are so difficult for us to grasp, like emotions and the experiences that we have.
Yeah.
So I think that especially using it in the context of this thing that's happening with the divorce happening and like all these moving pieces, narrative approach really seems to be like a natural selection for that. It sounds like you're saying it really works well with the clients that you have.
It works well. It works well with adults too, because when adults come into the session and they're in this vulnerable emotional state, it's almost a regression, and they're looking for that narrative from me as the therapist, and I can do the same thing with them.
Yeah, like, how do they orient themselves? Like, where does this place them in their own story?
Yeah, right. And hearing things like, here's the story, and it's also not your fault. You are not responsible. Those types of things.
Like, there's a lot of other things happening that contribute to this.
Yeah.
So I wonder, like, so if we're here and I'm listening to this, I'm a person that's listening to you, I'm like, hey, I like the things that you're saying. Maybe I'm even going through a divorce right now. What are some of the things that I might be seeing in my child, or what are some things that I might be experiencing in myself that might kind of let me know that, hey, it'd be a good idea for me to reach out?
Things that you will see in your child can be behavior change, withdrawal, issues happening at school that are seemingly unexplained, but also you might see nothing at all. Because your child might not be at a developmental stage to be processing the feelings that they're having. They don't have any words for it. They don't know to come to you as a parent to talk about it. And so my suggestion is, if you have a child and you're going through divorce, plop them in therapy immediately with like a play therapist if they're very young, because they have so many questions about safety and security that they can't articulate.
Well, I think that what you said there, there's a piece of this that you're saying there that I kind of want to follow a little bit further. Not only may they not have language, but you might not really be a safe person to come to and talk to about this stuff. Mm-hmm. If they see that you're mad all the time about the marriage and the situation that you're in, it may not, like for them, their perspective, it may not be okay for them to ask some of these questions that you may be totally open and totally okay with them asking. But to them, it may not seem like it's okay. So they could just bottle it up, keep it in.
Yeah. And if some people think, I'm going through this divorce, it's very expensive, I can't afford therapy, fine, go get a book. One of the books I really like to give families, parents and kids alike, depending on the age of the kids, of course, is called Collateral Damage. And it's very anecdotal, so you don't have to read it cover to cover if you don't want to, but it gives a lot of information about do's and don'ts, what to expect from children of divorce, and also how you feel as a parent.
Okay. I think you're right. There are so many resources out there, whereas like even if you can't afford therapy, or even if you're really turned off by the idea of therapy, that like maybe there are other options that you should pursue, because this does affect everyone within the family.
It does. It does affect everyone. And the biggest advice I can give parents is keep the conflict to a minimum and talk to your kids about it. Like I said, they're a sponge, so they don't have to talk back. You just implant ideas into their head while you're driving in the car. It's not your fault. Everything's going to be fine. And explain the custody switch process. You know, this day you're at dad's, this day you're at mom's. Put up a schedule for them so that they can see it, because they're very concrete.
Mm-hmm.
And just stay in contact.
I think those all sound like really good suggestions for families that are going through this type of thing. So I want to transition a little bit from talking about some of the work that you do with some of the people that are going through divorce, or some people that might need your services, especially regulating a lot of the emotions that are going on with them, and switch kind of like to a different population that I know you serve, which is actually other therapists and other counselors. So can you talk to me a little bit about the project that you're working on now, and just kind of give me an idea of the direction that you're going with this?
Yeah. So me and Nicole Davis, who's my partner, I think I mentioned that before, she's a financial specialist, and of course I'm a therapist. We've developed Therapy Practice University, and our mission is to help therapists be confident in their business so that they can provide good service to their clients. So we help them build a website. We teach them about paid advertising, how to answer the phone, how to attract the clients that they want to serve. And in turn, clients have a better experience, and therapy becomes something very accessible and normalized.
Yeah, I think that's a big need. I think that you hear this a lot of times when the therapists graduate, they're not really taught how to run a business.
No.
And we're good at talking to people. We're not always good at talking about money. We're not good at selling ourselves at all.
Selling anything.
Yeah. And I think that part of that has to do with our training, because whenever we're in session, we're not trying to sell anything.
Right.
We're trying to do the opposite in a lot of ways, is we're trying to expand the way that people are experiencing things. And I think that for a lot of therapists, they enter the business world and they just, you know, they're just struggling.
Yeah.
So for you, it sounds like so you're teaching therapists how to answer the phone. Tell me a little bit about what that looks like.
Oh, wow. So just answering the phone and returning a client phone call is a great start. Historically, when I myself have been looking for a counselor, they usually don't call back, or they answer the phone very unprofessionally. I'm not really sure if I got the business owner or not, because it is a business, and they don't help me understand like what their process is like. So we're teaching therapists how to take charge of the phone call with clients for the client benefit, okay? So that the client can understand, is this therapist a good fit for me? Mm-hmm. And the therapist can understand that too. Is this client? This is all mutual. Is this a good fit, period? Is the location convenient for everybody? Are the times available convenient for everybody? Is the modality of therapy that's going to be used something that the client's comfortable mm-hmm. with? Because if all those things are not a fit, it's a waste of everybody's time. And then the client ends up getting this runaround thing going on. And then they start not trusting the therapeutic process. And
yeah, they may be turned off to therapy altogether.
Yes, that's a good way to put that.
And I think that what you said is so important there is that for us as therapists, taking charge of the conversation is our way of being able to communicate the information that the client may need.
Yes.
But also both the client and the therapist being able to gauge if this is a good fit. And if it's not a good fit, then being able to say that and offer a referral in those moments.
I think it's really important to spend at least 10 minutes on the phone with each prospective client because mm-hmm. for me, I'm a quirky person and I'm really just, I'm an open book, and some people, for some people, that's not attractive. They're more reserved, and that's just the way their personality is, and that's fine. But they're not going to like me in session, and it's happened a couple times. You know, so I get a hold of someone like that, and they come to session, and then they leave, and I am completely fine with that. We also have to communicate that I have a therapy dog that I have in session with me nearly every day. I'm honestly not really sure if my clients like me. I think they like Piper better. but that's something that needs to be talked about. Are you comfortable with this? And so we have to get through all of this information before we can determine if we're going to set up an appointment.
I'd say I think you're right. 10 minutes. I know that me personally, I probably actually take a little bit longer. Unless I'm dealing with a call from couples, because usually like once they find you, they're like, thank goodness.
Yeah.
We're going to be okay. They mm-hmm. may have some questions for me. But I know that usually when I'm talking about parents and doing counseling with their teenagers, that they want to know a lot.
Right.
And I think that even the 10 minutes that you're talking about, I just talked to a lady the other day on the phone, and we didn't even end up, she didn't actually end up even becoming a client of mine. Mm-hmm. But she thanked me afterwards because she said that I talked to her the longest out of six other therapists that she talked to that day. And I think that it's just so important that sometimes I don't want to say that we forget, but in some ways we do. We forget that these people are really struggling that are calling to us mm-hmm. and being able to take control of that conversation, being able to have these conversations, being able to know what I'm going to say.
Yes.
I think we've all been in that situation too, where we've floundered what we're going to say. And it sounds like you're saying that that's one of the areas that you guys are really helping other clinicians with. You said with advertising as well.
Yep. So Psychology Today's advertising, mm-hmm. Google Ads, we teach them how to set it up and run it and maintain it. We also give them, I don't know how many thousands of negative keywords, just here you go, and negative keywords for your Google Ads campaign is very important because it helps you decrease the amount of unnecessary money that you're spending on clicks that aren't relevant for you.
And Google will want you to spend that money unnecessarily.
Yes.
They will never tell you that you shouldn't pay for this keyword.
Exactly. Yeah. So the most important thing for me is for clients to have a good experience. And if I can do that through teaching therapists how to run their business, then that's what I'm going to do. Same thing with working with parents. If I can help their kids by working with them, that's what I'm going to do. And so for me, I'm always trying to be a step ahead.
Okay. So being able to help with advertising with Psychology Today, doing Google, I always want to call it AdWords. I know they changed it.
Yeah,
now.
Google Ads.
Yeah, Google AdWords is so much better. Anyway, I think you said you guys do one other thing. Is that right?
We work on mindset, money mindset, and then Nicole has a whole program of herself on how to track your numbers in private practice, budgeting for advertising and all of the things mm-hmm. that I teach. controlling the income and the expenses in your practice, deciding on where your location should be, how to identify and attract your ideal client.
Well, I think that that's something that's so important. I think that, therapist counselors, we're not really generalist. I think sometimes that we Mm-mm. try to be, but I don't think that just really fits with us. I mean, I think that's a lot of times what people kind of learn over time, but the sooner and sooner they can learn what kind of clients they want to work with, mm-hmm. what type of clients they're good with, the better off they'll be. And especially when it comes to advertising and everything.
Yeah.
It makes it so much easier to write a Psychology Today profile, makes it so much easier to run a Google ad campaign whenever you're trying to mm-hmm. target a smaller portion of the population, which will actually end up converting to more people coming to see you.
Yeah, and it's better for the people too to be seeing a therapist that specializes in what they're dealing with. You know, like if they mm-hmm. saw me for addiction, they would be in big trouble because I don't deal with addiction in any shape, way, or form. I refer out for that.
So. Yeah, I think that's important. And I think this is a really good service that you're providing. You said it's called Therapist University.
Therapy Practice University. Therapy Practice University. Named it that because you don't learn how to run your business in school. So it's the business university for therapists.
There you go. And I'll provide a link to that so people can find out more information.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I appreciate you being able to take the time. I appreciate the work that you're doing with Thanks. These clients, especially, like I said, it's a really tough population. I don't think there's a lot of therapists that work with it. But I also appreciate what you're doing for fellow therapists in creating this university as well, which is very unique.
Thank you.
You know, you hear about some people that are doing these, but like you're really close and home, right?
It hasn't been done by a therapist, I don't believe.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's always been done by other organizations mm-hmm. and everything like that. So thank you for the work that you do, and thank you for taking the time.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of St. Louis Therapist Spotlight. The music that you're listening to is called Lobby Time by Kevin McLeod, and that is licensed under Creative Commons. And you can find more great tunes like this at creativecommons.org.